Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. We need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station, not necessarily. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls off for the time being. We have with us Joel Skousen of A World Affairs Brief, and we're going to be talking about several things this evening. Joel, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Well, it's always my pleasure, Stan, to be with you.
Well, tell us a little bit about just why don't you bring us up perhaps to date? We've been hearing about the attack on Iraq. What do you think it'll happen before the first of the year? What is the current thought on that?
Well, the administration showed every sign of wanting to attack in late October, this very month. But their plans really had a monkey wrench thrown in them when the UN went and signed 2 days ago an agreement with Iraq to resume inspections. The Bush administration was extremely upset. They went into overdrive with backdoor negotiations all through the UN. And sure enough, we had breaking news today. They ended up convincing the Hans Blix, the chief arms control inspector, to renege on his agreement with Iraq to withhold inspections indefinitely until they got new inspection terms from the Security Council. And this means that the U.S. has successfully turned enough votes within the Security Council to ensure that they're going to get a resolution with a complete new set of criteria, a much tougher set of criteria for Iraq. So the U.S. and British intent in this is to make sure that Iraq cannot accept inspections so that the U.S. has an excuse to go in and attack immediately.
Sort of like what we did with Afghanistan when they said that, you know, they'd like to talk about what we could do with Osama bin Laden, maybe send him to another country or give him to us if they would show them the proof, or send him to a third country for trial, and we made impossible demands on Afghanistan, like turn over every member of leader of Al-Qaeda, but of course we never told them who we really wanted. We made demands that we knew they could not, of course, agree to.
I think that's what the U.S. is up to here. It's very, very clear from watching the president's response to various proposals from Congress that he has much more on his mind than attacking Iraq. This is a major intervention within the entire Middle East. When the Senate and the House both proposed language at some time in the negotiations, he dropped the phrase from his wish list that he wanted to reestablish international peace in the entire Middle East, meaning he wanted carte blanche to be able to intervene anywhere in the Middle East. He got very, very upset, claimed, I will not accept any resolution that ties my hands.
Well, of course, we're going to be talking about the possibility of going to war with Iran or Syria or who knows what other countries over there. And, of course, that could really open an awful can of worms.
Well, it's true. You know, what's very interesting is that Syria, Iran is probably the most dangerous nation in terms of weapons of mass destruction there, and it makes Iraq's weapons pale by comparison. Even some of the Israeli generals have come out and admitted that Iraq isn't the problem that the United States is making it out to be. Israel claims that Iraq doesn't have nuclear weapons. They do have chemical and biological weapons, but very few. And interestingly enough, the Israelis said the United States has to explain why Saddam Hussein did not use any of his chemical or biological weapons in the Gulf War. He had them. He had more missiles at that time. He needed the missiles that he launched at Israel, nor at the American barracks in Arabia or in Kuwait were any chemical or biological weapons used. So it makes one wonder what's what's the threat? I can tell you that there's a much, much bigger threat in the Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, who have thousands of Katyusha rockets and other medium-range rockets, Kfir 5 and 6, that they have been stockpiling, rockets that they have received through Iran and Syria. The Israelis know where they are. The Israelis could target it. The Israelis have the capability of doing a preemptive strike, and yet the U.S. continues to prohibit Israel from attacking southern Lebanon and cleaning out this hotbed of terrorism and threat to Israel. And yet, I think that this has to be on the target list of President Bush vis-a-vis this Iraq war. So one has to ask, why is he holding back so that U.S. forces and coalition can attack southern Lebanon rather than Israel direct?
And I think that is really a serious question, because I assume that the answer to that would be that if Israel were to do it, why, it would inflame the anger of the Arabs. But if we do it, it's going to inflame the anger of the Muslims throughout the world towards the United States. There's no question. And, of course, my concern is, what impact will that have on not only our trade with Arab and Muslim nations throughout the world, on the stability of the American dollar, because if they, as almost a quarter of the world's population, refuse to deal in American dollars or goods in the future, that could have a catastrophic effect. And then what effect will that have on the large, rather radical Muslim population of the United States, those 1.6 or 2 million Muslims who go to the radical mosques here and identify, of course, with the radical Islamic movement?
Well, it is my theory, of course, that the only reason to explain the relative hypocrisy of the Bush position of targeting Iraq instead of other more dangerous nations with weapons of mass destruction, more dangerous in terms of missiles, is that their role is to antagonize the Muslim world. This is part of a global Hegelian strategy to create conflict. I think they're heading for World War III, and that world war is going to be triggered through conflict in the Middle East. And Iraq is another one of those stages, like Bosnia and Kosovo was, to irritate Slavic and Muslim people around the world, to make the U.S. appear to be the bully of the world. Even Nelson Mandela stated that very thing in a speech, being an old communist cadre as he is. He made the statement, you know, the United States has become the bully of the world, and this is going to become the drumbeat, I think, that's going to resound throughout the third world in the next few years as the United States continues to push and act unilaterally. And it doesn't make any difference, Dr. Stan, if they get a coalition together. Everybody knows that the U.S. is twisting arms, bribing, pushing people into this. They know that the U.S. is being a bully in this regard and intervening without real justification around the world.
But, of course, if it hadn't been for the United States, why Nelson Mandela would still be on Robben Island there in South Africa. We got him freed. We put him in power. And, of course, but I don't question at all the fact that you're right. And, of course, my fear is that we really are moving into World War III, and the attack on Iraq is simply the first step in precipitating that. This will be like Sarajevo during World War I.
Yes, it's very disturbing to watch this come about, especially the drumbeats of the war on terrorism. I'm sitting here in Portland, Oregon today and going through this big propaganda that began here in the Northwest about the arrest of these three out of six terrorists, or supposed terrorists, that are here in this Portland apartment building. It's amazing how small this story really is. I mean, you have, if this is all the better that Ashcroft could produce in terms of terrorist cells within the United States, then he really hasn't faced up to what real terrorism is. I think this is every bit of grandstanding, trying to make mountains out of molehills in order to continue to justify this war on terrorism. And it's amazing to me, Stan, how the media you know, tried to make this 24-hour coverage here in Oregon with helicopter photos circling around this apartment building, and virtually nothing's going on. I mean, this is, they had enough police down there to act as if it was a war zone, and there was virtually nothing going on. There was no hostage taking. They had already arrested them before 8 in the morning. They still had the whole thing cordoned off. The apartment people couldn't get back in their apartment. They had one car down there that they were going through. Of course, there's no opposition. There was nobody armed. It was incredible how they tried to make this into a 24-hour talk show, because the Attorney General of the United States made this a national piece of celebrity propaganda, trying to turn this into a showpiece of the war on terrorism. And here you have three Muslim people who are in and around the country trying to get to Afghanistan, and you have three black Americans. I only found out they were black by watching the pictures. The news media would never identify them as black, who had supposedly recently converted to Islam, and who were in a support role for these people. But there was no weapons, no explosives, no intentions to attack Americans. They were trying to simply go out and support Al-Qaeda. What's very interesting about this that the media never picked up on is that the three blacks here in Portland all had some type of nom de guerre, some type of indication that they belonged to a Marxist regime prior to. One of them was named Patrice Lumumba, who, of course, was the communist dictator of the Congo. Patrice Lumumba IV. The other, a woman, October Martinique Lewis. There was, in 1794, a famous historical freeing of the slaves that occurred in October in the island of Martinique, and this has become a communist slogan among racial and class conflict over the years. So, you know, Jeffrey Leon Battle, whether or not his real name is Battle, I don't know, or whether or not he's simply gotten egocentric because of the last name. Nevertheless, these interesting three people, and October Martinique Lewis was the ex-wife of Jeffrey Battle. So we know there's a Marxist connection there because of these names that they've taken upon them. You know, just as Cassius Clay took the name Muhammad Ali, this is typical of leftists aligning themselves with communist and Muslim movements to take nom de guerre.
All right,
interesting
fine.
That
well,
no
course,
one picked up on that.
Well, of course, now, there were no weapons involved. This was just an effort to go to Afghanistan?
Well, they had some handguns in there. There was no armed resistance for this. They had FBI had tracked them practicing with arms. They had at one time had some assault rifles that they were shooting at a rock quarry, apparently. But interestingly enough, the FBI already had all of this information in their computers from a year and a half ago when this assault weapon practicing occurred with several people out there. Of course, they never arrested them then. These things seem to be timed for the right moment for propaganda value.
You mean you think that they're other were being manipulated? It's sort of like what's going on this debate back in Washington, D.C. on the Office of Homeland Security, and everything we're being told time and time again, day after day, is of the debate has to do with civil service the requirements for the employees of the Office of Homeland Security, and that could be nothing further than the truth. Senator Byrd is filibustering and trying to block the bill because it takes away the power of Congress, restructures our government, gives all power to the executive branch of government, just like Hitler did back in 1933 after the so-called communist attack or burning of the Reichstag, and using that as a justification, he asked for additional power to deal with the communists, just as today they want additional power to deal with the terrorists. And then they redefined the term terrorism, having nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. Almost anything that any American could do could be considered that. But all we're hearing, you know, about the debate on the Office of Homeland Security is it has to do with civil service rights, nothing about to do with the total restructuring of the federal government such that it will never be the same again, and we will no longer have a representative government. We will have an all-powerful executive branch. Have you noticed how they're sort of changing the whole issue so the average American will not know what this is about?
Well, while I agree with you, Stan, there is something about the Civil Service Act which is at issue here that's very legitimate. It is not, as the president says, that he wants the ability to hire and fire at will and to transfer people without tenure and without some of the same hiring and firing restrictions. What is integral to this Civil Service Act is the whistleblower protection law. That's what Bush is after.
He doesn't want the people to be able to report on misconduct in government have any protection.
That's exactly right. In every one of these cover-ups where the dark side of government is operating, you have legitimate law enforcement people blowing the whistle on government, and the government has to shut them down. And that's why President Clinton issued that executive order that all of a sudden stripped Navy divers, specifically stated, people of this particular unit do not have protection of the Whistleblower Protection Act. Can you imagine that? An executive order stripping a certain core element of the U.S. military. And who were those people? They were the ones assigned to go down and retrieve the black box from TWA Flight 800 when they altered it, and then they put it back on the ocean floor. Those Navy divers knew that the U.S. had retrieved that box and put it back on the Navy floor, and Clinton did not want them whispering or leaking that to anyone, and that's why he withdrew whistleblower protection from them.
Well, of course, they couldn't let the American people know the truth, and that is that the TWA 800 was shot down by missiles, and of course, this probably was somehow related to this cover-up of Islamic terrorist involvement. We don't know, but we do know that over 200 people saw the missiles, and they had to convince the people that it was an explosion in the central fuel tank, and they did everything they could, of course, to slant the news and to destroy anybody within the media who tried to bring out the truth. And that's what happened to Christina Borgensen, who's been our guest on several occasions, who was actually a award Emmy-winning producer for CBS television. And when she tried to bring out the truth about Flight 800, why, of course, she went into the buzzsaw. In fact, we carry her book, Into the Buzzsaw, What Happens to Somebody in the Media Who Tries to Get Out the Real Story.
Yes, that's really true. It happened to James Sanders and his wife, who had a lot of good evidence about the cover-up of the government involved in this. You know, there is very interesting witnesses that did see the signature, two or three witnesses saw the signature of a drone flying horizontally over Long Island, which does mean that there was a Navy missile exercise going on at this time. So whether or not Islamic terrorists with Stinger missiles took advantage of knowing that there was a Navy missile exercise to throw a couple of missiles up, or whether or not an additional U.S. missile went astray, I'm not sure we can determine at this time, but all I know is that there was a massive cover-up from the government.
Amen to that, and we may never know until somebody has the courage to come forward. And at that time, of course, why we may well be in World War III, and at that point, it would be unpatriotic to criticize the government.
Well, that's what they're counting on. Once a war starts, it becomes they begin to target people who are critics of government as aiding and abetting the enemy, and I fully expect them to gear up for that.
Well, you know, this is what happened after Pearl Harbor, and when it became very obvious that President Roosevelt had manipulated this whole incident, knew where the Japanese fleet was, and of course had left ships unguarded at Pearl Harbor, sort of as an inducement for the Japanese to strike. When it became obvious that was true, and we were well into the war, politicians were told, well, this would be unpatriotic. I mean, after all, American boys are dying. You can't come out and criticize the president. That would be un-American. And so that's exactly what's going to happen as we move into World War III. And, of course, history still has never revealed the truth. In fact, you know, one of the most amazing things, Joel, is much of the information dealing with what happened at Pearl Harbor is still classified to this day, over 60 years later. And I wonder if we're really trying to keep the Japanese from finding out what happened, or maybe the communists from finding out what happened, or maybe the Americans from finding out what happened.
Well, I agree with your suspicion. Certainly it's to keep the Americans from finding out, because the Japanese know, the communists know, the only ones who don't know are the American people.
Right.
It's like all of the secrets from World War II. Operation Keel Haul is still a classified secret, where we forced all the Russian people to be repatriated against their will back to Russia, and we lost all those German prisoners, never came back from the gulags. 5,000 U.S. soldiers were captured by the Russians, never came back from the gulags. All of that's still classified.
Well, there's just, of course, that's why I do what I do, is hoping that some people out there are listening and are caring. And incidentally, if any of our listeners want to know more about Operation Keelhaul, we have a little packet on that, or we do have a video on that available through our ministry. And, of course, approximately 6 million Russians who had either defected to the Germans because they hated communism or had been captured by the Germans were rounded up and forcibly sent back to Russia at the end of the Second World War. And at least 2 million were promptly killed. Another 2 million were sent to Russia, to the Gulag, to die. And we don't know what happened to the rest of them. But this is really a terrible, terrible thing. It's known about in other countries, never mentioned by the media here in the United States. Because, of course, our focus is to be on the tragedy of the 6 million Jews dying. We're to ignore the 6 million Russians that we sent back to die.
Or the 6 to 7 million Germans that the Allies purposely bombed when they did carpet bombing of cities. You know, you talk about genocide. I'm completely convinced that the bombs at Hiroshima and Nagasaki did not have to be dropped on population centers. The same impact, the same thing could have accomplished by attacking a military target or just even dropping it out of the middle of Tokyo Bay as a show of demonstration would have had the same impact. You didn't have to kill millions of people.
Well, even more than that, we have a clipping from the Chicago Tribune on the very day the peace treaty was signed, saying that the Japanese had tried 5 times in the previous 6 months to surrender, and each time we refused to talk about surrendering. That meant, of course, that Iwo Jima and the invasion of Okinawa were totally unnecessary, and certainly it wasn't necessary to drop the bombs, because the Japanese were ready to surrender 6 months beforehand, and we wouldn't let them.
And the same thing with the Germans. Six months before the war was ending, the Germans were pleading to sue for peace, and the Allies wanted, of course, they had promised Stalin that he had to be able to take half of Europe, and so they had to wait for him to accelerate his taking of Eastern Germany and Poland, etc. We could have saved millions. In fact, we now know that the bombing of Dresden occurred as a promise to Stalin that they would help him pave the way in his movement toward Berlin by firebombing Dresden.
I think about 125,000 people died in those 2 nights.
Well, at least, yeah.
Right.
Real tragedy.
1 million people were dying every month after the last 2 years of the war. And the war could have been over much earlier, but they prolonged the war intentionally so the maximum number of people in suffering would be inflicted. And that, of course, is unconscionable. And I had an opportunity to spend some time with General Albert Wedemeyer, who was the chief of planning for American military forces. And his story of how Churchill did everything he could to prolong the war. In fact, I remember General Wedemeyer saying to me, "Have you ever found a conspiracy?" You know, he knew there was a conspiracy. He'd been at the highest levels of government. In fact, he was the one who was personified in Herman Wouk's The Winds of War. He was the general who would regularly have dinner with FDR and Churchill. And his question to me was, "Did you ever find a conspiracy?" Because he knew it was there, and at the time, in 1980, I didn't understand the conspiracy. I wish I'd known then what I know now.
Yes, it's very sad. Of course, the American generals opposed the Dresden bombing, but it was the first one where they were forced into it. You see, it's very interesting that Churchill had tasked the British bomber groups, Lancaster bombers, to do most of the city bombings. Ever since 1941, they were purposely targeting cities. They would pick targets in the middle of residential areas, claiming it was a Gestapo headquarters or something, just to have an excuse to bomb civilian areas. But the Americans were legitimately only targeting military targets until Dresden. And that's when Eisenhower switched sides under pressure from Churchill and gave the order that they were to participate in the bombing, carpet bombing of Dresden. And it was very sad to read the detailed histories that have been come to light now, where they bombed it 3 times in 1 day. After the first series of carpet bombings, they came in 3 hours later, and the forward air controller, who was up in an aircraft directing the American bombers, had them unload their bombs. He said, "Unload them on the darkened areas, not on where the fires are burning. Spread your bombs out to the darkened areas," he said, which meant they went on the residential areas, which had no military value.
Right.
Very, very sad.
Well, of course, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And if our listeners out there this evening have never heard these things before, you have now. And you need to find out if what we're saying is true. Because if it is, then, of course, you have an obligation to become involved. Because behind everything that happened there were the forces of darkness, truly dark and satanic forces. And that, of course, is the subject of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, going into the satanic conspiracy that controlled the leaders of the American government and the British government during that tragic time of history. Well, Joel, what specific things, because we've sort of got our conversation around a lot of things. What was the thing you wanted to cover this evening?
Well, one of the things that I really want to cover is a very key point that Americans simply don't realize is happening to them. The whole debate on terrorism is shifting away from the reality. I remember the phrase you used about illusion of reality at the beginning of your show. One of the things that is really illusory is this concept about terrorism. Americans really don't have any experience with terrorism. The administration, for example, has tried to say that there are hundreds of Al-Qaeda sleeper cells within the United States. And they don't even know what a sleeper cell is. But a sleeper cell in terrorism terminology are highly trained, usually outside the target country, trained in explosives, sniping, and sabotage. They infiltrate the country to begin their attacks, and there's hardly any way that anybody can stop them. They have their own packages of explosives. They know how to wire them. They're experts in these things. None of the terrorists that have been arrested by the United States come anywhere near close to this type of profile. They haven't found any terrorists, even the ones in Buffalo, the ones in Portland, the ones in Michigan, John Lynn, or, you know, that have had any explosives training and that have carried out real acts of terrorism. What they've simply found are people who are typical thugs with criminal records who have been induced some ages to get involved with supporting the Taliban. This happens in any war. But you notice they never prosecuted Reed of Reed College fame, you know, who went over to fight for the Soviets.
John Reed, right.
Or John Reed. And, you know, they made him a national hero, and they made a movie out of him, Red. They didn't give him life imprisonment for, fighting for the enemy. This is the first time that they've gone after people in fighting for the enemy when they've had Americans fighting for the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. They had Americans fighting for the communists in Spain, and they never prosecuted any of those. It's the same thing. You see, I'm not complaining or trying to defend the people that they're rounding up. These are not good people. But these are not sleeper terrorist cells. These are thugs or criminals who have been induced to go and do something in solidarity with Al-Qaeda. But real terrorist cells are people who are blowing up electrical pylons, driving car bombs to a place and exploding them, or using sniper weapons to kill public officials or mayors or judges. And we have virtually had none of this since 9/11. And so it makes you wonder here, of course, you know, the government's excuse on this is that the FBI is so effective at tracking down Al-Qaeda that they're just huddled inside their apartments, just shivering for their life and afraid to move. But this is absolutely absurd. If the American people only knew what real terrorism was like, they'd realize that even in countries like Israel, where security is 100 times more effective and concentrated than the U.S., they have weekly terrorist events. When they're killing terrorists, they're breaking up cells weekly, they still produce tens of terrorists to be able to attack them. Same thing in France. They have regular terrorist attacks. The IRA pulls out these attacks no matter how much British security. It's almost impossible to stop. The fact that we don't have, haven't had, any legitimate organized terrorism in the United States since 9/11 indicates that something's wrong with the administration's claim that there are hundreds of sleeper cells, that there are sleeper cells anywhere, in fact. If they are here, they're controlled, and they're not striking, and we have to ask, why aren't they striking?
And I think that's the question, why?
Well, I think they're controlled.
All right, I agree with you totally.
And I think they're controlled. I have to look with great suspicion upon the major terrorist events that we've had. We've had Oklahoma City. We've had the first World Trade bombing in the 9/11 major airplane scandal.
We're going to have to take a 3-minute break. So if you'd like to get yourself a cup of coffee or a drink of water, and then we'll be right back here. Our guest this evening is Joel Skousen, World Affairs Brief. And we're not going to take any calls for the time being because we want to hear what Joel has to say. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that those of you out here listening to us are believe that there is a real problem in America, that perhaps you're even beginning to understand the spiritual nature of this battle, because what we're describing so far this evening really is organized evil. You can't understand the horrible, horrible things that happened in Europe and Japan during the Second World War. 1 million people died every month during the last 2 years of the Second World War, and it could have been stopped very early on, but somebody wanted to continue the horrible carnage. And so you really need to understand that there are evil and wicked people in the world, and many times these people gravitate, or Lucifer places them in very high positions in government. And, of course, as we're told in Ephesians 6:8, you know, we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spirits of wickedness in high places. I guess that's Ephesians 11 and 12. Anyway, we hope that many of you out there will decide you'd like to partner with us in this effort to educate others about the true nature of the battle we're engaged in. It's not political, it's not ideological, it's not philosophical, it's spiritual. But it's fought on a political and ideological and cultural and battlefield. And so if you'd like to join with us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And consider seriously joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, we'll be glad to send you one. Our August newsletter deals with the Oklahoma City bombing and what really happened and the tie-in of the Oklahoma City bombing to the Muslim terrorists that was carefully covered up by government officials who, in my estimation, wanted to give the terrorists all the rope that they could possibly have until there would be some major incident that would inflame the American people. And there was a definite tie-in between, of course, the Oklahoma City bombing and the Philippines and the Al-Qaeda movement that was over there. There was an offshoot of Osama bin Laden's efforts. And if you actually read the article, you'll find out that there was a tie-in to Osama bin Laden. But, of course, we couldn't uncover that in 1995, because if we had, there wouldn't have been a September 11th, 2001. Or if you'd like to get our September newsletter, why, it simply deals with the Office of Homeland Security, the real purpose of the Office of Homeland Security. So please, of course, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter and you haven't had one before, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll be glad to send you one. And then please tell others about our website, that's radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com, and you can go there and you can certainly find our archive programs. We, as you know, do 5 hours of talk radio a day, and many of those programs are archived there. Our newsletters are up there, and you're welcome to pull them down and copy them. Of course, that won't help us, other than, of course, we will appreciate your help in reaching others, because we are truly involved and a spiritual battle for the survival of Western civilization. And if America is destroyed in this coming war, then what will happen to civilization as we know it? And, of course, one only has to go to the great cities of Europe, the ruins of Ephesus or of Troy, or to see what happens to nations that go from war to war to war. I was in Germany after the Second World War. I saw the rubble that had once been Germany, and, of course, the horrible devastation that took place there. Well, right now, of course, this is the time when we once again give our telephone number. It's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this evening is Joel Skousen. Joel, would you like to get out your website and your telephone number? Joel?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Stan. My newsletter is a weekly email newsletter called the World Affairs Brief. You can check it out on the Internet at www.joelskousen.com. If you don't have access to the internet, you can call my office during the daytime hours at 801-224-4746. That's 801-224-4746. There is a print edition of the World Affairs Brief that comes out at the end of each month, a compilation of each of the weekly briefs, and that's available, several free samples, if you call or write to my office.
And, of course, the email edition comes every week, and I always read it through. It's one of the few things I read through routinely as soon as it comes, because Joel has a lot of contacts with people, and his information is always stimulating and challenging. So we were talking, of course, the question is why. Why aren't we seeing these terrorist attacks in America? And your comment was, these terror cells, if they're here, are controlled. And I really believe that. In fact, there's a great deal to suggest that they were here in 1990, and Saddam Hussein wanted to mobilize them. And, of course, other people, the Iraqis and the Iranians and Syrians, just wouldn't allow him to, or maybe whoever really controls these other terror cells wouldn't allow him to.
Well, frankly, I think it goes much deeper. And there's so far, every one of the major terrorist events that we've had, Stan, has more discernible ties to the U.S. government than they do to Iraq or Iran or any of the other countries. You look at Oklahoma City bombing. There were Middle Eastern accomplices of Timothy McVeigh. You've talked about that on your show before. Jaina Davis, the TV reporter in Oklahoma, who first really put that information out. A lot of investigations. She was shut down by the FBI for bringing forth the Middle Eastern connection with these. And she never put two and two together. I've talked to her numerous times and said, but don't you see that even though his name is Husseini, John Doe number two from Iraq, and that the FBI had him in custody and the FBI released him, and the FBI denies that he has anything to do with it, wouldn't bring his name before the grand jury? Can't you see, Jane, I said, that that's the key question. Why is the United States covering for John Doe number two for the Middle Eastern? If it's Iraq, wouldn't they jump on the chance to broadcast to the world that Iraq was involved in the bombing of Oklahoma City? But they're not. They're covering for it. And there's a connection between these people and the FBI, because the FBI agents who she talked to were sympathetic, but it was higher-ups at headquarters that were saying that information about the Middle Eastern connections to be suppressed at all costs. And the same thing happened in the first World Trade Center bombings. There were FBI informants involved with these Middle Easterners who were working on that bombing. And we find the same connections now between government contacts. Of course, we have Moussaoui, who was arrested before 9/11, and the headquarters of the FBI refused to let his apartment be searched, kept him under wraps. We have the connection with Huffman Aviation in Venice, Florida, that trained two of the pilots in what I call a ruse training in Cessnas. That wasn't really where they get the training. They were just simply covering for their real training. But that was a CIA operation at Huffman Aviation. So we have a CIA covert ops section having contact with two of the supposed hijackers on that. These are the types of information which point the finger not only at foreknowledge, but collusion between dark side government agents and terrorists. So I've come to the conclusion that what we have in the United States is these globalist leaders who have decided we're going to force the United States into a new world order through the conflict of war. It's through the horrors of war that will get Americans to not worry about their constitutional protection, not worry about their liberties. We're just going to make things so horrendous, so horrible for them. They cry out to be saved at all costs, and it will be the UN that will save them, because in this next war, the U.S. is going to be targeted and destroyed by preemptive nuclear strikes. And I believe this globalist secret government is antagonizing the world purposely in order to help provide the motive and the justification for the two great missile and nuclear and biological and chemical weapon powers, Russia and China, to finally pull off that attack.
And
right now,
course,
they're feigning weakness.
Yeah, but right now, of course, we're doing everything we can to finance them. I mean, to finance China, creating the best enemy money can buy, to finance Russia, to finance their ability to build new nuclear weapons with our money. It's the oldest thing in the world. You create the enemy, and, of course, you utilize that for your purpose.
And we look the other way as they transfer arms and nuclear and biological and chemical technology to all of their client states, including Iran, Iraq, Syria, Egypt, North Korea. Both Pakistan and India, have their are client states of either Russia or China. So, you know, we're doing nothing about those while we're beating the drums as if Iraq is the only enemy in the world and something's wrong with that picture.
Well, of course there is, but the thing is the American people can't see that because, of course, they don't understand the overview of history and how, from 1918 on, we financed Russia, and of course, in the 30s, we financed Adolf Hitler and even helped him during the war, Second World War itself. That's very difficult for the average American to see. They can't understand Vietnam. And the fact that all during Vietnam, of course, here you have this little country the size of the state of Mississippi, and, the greatest country in the world, the United States, can't defeat this little tiny country. And the reason, of course, was, first of all, we didn't try. Secondly, they were getting supplies from Russia, and we were funding Russia. And we were building the trucks, the Ford motor trucks being built at the Gorky plant were the ones that were taking the supplies down the Ho Chi Minh Trail, the supplies that were used to kill American boys.
Of course, we had safe areas, places we couldn't pursue, no pursued areas.
Right.
I was in the military during the Vietnam era, and we knew it was standard operating procedure. I was an F-4 fighter pilot, and we weren't able to even arm our weapons unless a missile was on its way towards our aircraft.
And that was a missile that was not built in North Vietnam. It would have been built in Russia.
That's right, with technology that was stolen from America or allowed to be stolen.
Right.
But, you know, it's interesting, Stan, that it isn't a matter of if people only knew this, even if they knew it, because I've told enough people these things, you've told enough people, and they still don't want to believe it because they cannot come to grips with the concept that anybody would be this evil. Americans are very naive about this. They really don't understand the nature of evil. And it isn't really that any one individual who's running this show is that evil and everybody else is just a yes man. There's some very sophisticated inducements for people to play yes man to a system that is partially evil or appears partially evil to them. It's very, very sophisticated. I know there's a lot of inducements to wealth and position and advancement. There's also the inducement of promises of immunity for people on the dark side of government, that they won't ever be prosecuted for what they do. And, there may even be spiritual promises of immunity from the judgment of God. That may be what Satan uses, the lure to the Faustian pact.
Of course, at one time, people really understood evil. Our churches used to talk about it, and they used to talk about hell and sin. And, we don't do that anymore because it doesn't sell very well. And I heard one of our leading Protestant ministers say, we used to talk about hell and, in our pulpits, but we don't do that because it isn't a very popular message. And so the American people have lost their vision that there really is organized evil in the world, that there is a conspiracy against God, that there are people who are totally depraved and without any human feelings of compassion. And that, of course, is what's really behind and driving everything going on in the world today. And if you don't understand the spiritual aspect of the battle, you can't understand anything going on or the things as they're going to be evolving here in this coming months.
Well, additionally, I think as I've studied the history of World War II, and I've read an awful lot about the German side and the American side and found out, I've always known that how is it possible that the German people, who were a Christian people generally, Protestant and Catholic, who had good moral values, how did they get involved in being such abject yes-man to a dictator like Hitler? And when you look at it very carefully, it was the rule of law that got them by the throat. And it's the same rule of law that is being built as a sacrosanct barrier upon which no American is allowed to say no to the law. And once you start to turn law into an evil vehicle, and you start to say, but it's the law, and you've got to turn somebody in, or you've got to do this and this evil, you've got to go ahead and execute this enemy of the state, what we're calling terrorists, because it's the law. And it's you're no longer able to defy the law by saying this is morally wrong, the law is wrong. We have it pumped into our heads that we're never allowed to challenge the law until we go to a legislature which is controlled by a majority which has become corrupt or become dumbed down as our Congress is. I'm very, very worried that it's the yesmanship to rule of law. Once the law becomes tyrannical, then you start to harness millions of people to do evil things because they're simply following orders. And our military has become a body of yes-men. Our officer class has become a body of yes-men to the politicians. They're not allowed to speak out publicly about what they know to be wrong, about the dismantling of American real military deterrence. And so we're going down the same path that Nazi Germany did without understanding.
Well, you know, there's a wonderful book written by Erwin Lutzer. It's called Hitler's Cross. And Erwin Lutzer is the senior pastor at the Moody Bible Church back in Chicago. And in that book, he talks about how the church was co-opted and how the ministers, most of them, went along with Adolf Hitler because, of course, their salaries were dependent upon it. There were a small group, of course, who did speak out. But tragically, so many didn't. And, of course, once the ministers went along with it, then their parishioners went along with it. And then there was a lot of bad theology that went in. One of the things that they used that Adolf Hitler loved to quote was and utilize was Romans 13, which is used in churches across America today, saying basically that God put the rulers in place. And, of course, Hitler loved that. God put me in place, and of course then if you were in violation of God's law, you were in revolt against God if you spoke out against this total evil that of course had the very soul of Germany in his hands.
It was the same thing with the divine right of kings that was used to pressure people into obedience all through the Middle Ages into worse things. What was very interesting too in reading the history of the German battle with the Russians is that there was this great feeling of nationalism, even among Hitler, that we have to destroy this great menace of communism and I'm the only one capable of doing it. You know, failing to recognize, or at least refusing to recognize, that the system that he had developed, Nazism, was just as controlling, you know, maybe 90% as ruthless as the system that Stalin was using. They had both become ruthless tyrannies controlling every aspect of human endeavor. And yet Hitler believed that his was superior and, that communism was the great threat. Well, we now know that communism is the great threat, but Nazism was ever bit as much of a threat. But people delude themselves when they get up against this Hegelian concept of you throw up an enemy for them and they fail to see what's becoming to themselves. And Americans are failing to see that law and government is becoming tyrannical and evil and snooping and surveilling and full of yes-men, military and police people, who will begin to do evil things in the name of the war on terrorism. And they don't see any of that because they only view the enemy that's constantly being conjured up in front of their minds.
And, of course, they do not understand that the USA Patriot Act is probably one of the most unpatriotic things that was ever passed, according to Ron Paul. Members of Congress were not allowed to read the bill before they were forced to vote on it in the aftermath of the anthrax attack. And that bill simply redefines terrorism, having nothing to do necessarily with Islamic terrorism. And, of course, then once, of course, you have redefined terrorism, then almost any person in this listening audience could become a terrorist. And, of course, their actions would come under federal control, which is total and exactly the opposite, the antithesis of what our founding fathers wanted. They did not want a highly centralized police force that will, of course, join federal and state and local police. That's what this is really all about. That's what the Office of Homeland Security is about.
You know, it's very interesting. It's very interesting, Stan, that the government is really going to great lengths to integrate local police into these terrorism task force, joint task force. In this Portland operation, they had all kinds of police from different jurisdictions involved in this operation. And they even flew back the U.S. attorney from Portland for this dog and pony show that Ashcroft put on, this press conference, at taxpayer expense, flew him all the way back just so that he could stand up and be recognized, you know, in light of the whole budget of the United States. I know that that's not much, but it's the principle of the thing, that rather than being stewards of saving people's money, they'll bring someone back simply for propaganda purposes. And to honor, they stood up and honored the sheriff and honored this other policeman, and everybody's got to get into the limelight. They corrupt people by sharing the loot with them, sharing the limelight with them, and make everybody proud of fighting this war on terrorism. It's a massive propaganda effort that is almost impossible to stop.
Well, we have a small voice, and as long as God gives us a microphone and a good guest like you, Joel, we'll be out there trying to make the American people understand that the media is not used to report the news. The media is used to shape your emotions and your reality. And, of course, reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. And I think that this really is so, so true today. Well, you know, I share your concern that so much of what's going on is really financed by our own government. In fact, that's really the subject of my latest newsletter. Where did this whole Islamic terrorist movement come from? You know, certainly Islam would be kind of moderate this last century, why Muslims and Christians in many parts of the world could live together. And it really wasn't until, of course, we toppled the Shah of Iran and brought the radical Ayatollah Khomeini to power in Iran, that, and then they began to spread this radical movement throughout the Middle East. And, of course, we backed the Saudis. We're financing this radical movement, not only, of course, in Saudi Arabia and Afghanistan and Pakistan, but right here in the United States. And that's why most of the mosques have come up, have been built by the Saudis, and they're spending money and a great deal of literature into our prisons. It said that up to 175,000 black convicts convert to Muslim in our prisons every year, and many of them have been promised that when chaos comes to our streets, that the prison doors will open. I hope that isn't true.
Well, it has nothing to do with the Muslim religion. These criminals, these thugs like these three in Portland that were supposedly converted to Islam, it's just a vehicle to exercise their hatred towards police in America. What's really behind this, including the radical Islamic movement, the thing that made the difference, as I've looked at the history of it, was the influence of Russia. Russia went in and brought these radical Islamic leaders to Patrice Lumumba University in Moscow to train them as terrorists, provided them with arms. That's why all of the terrorists worldwide have AK-47s, come from Russia and China. All the explosives, Semtex and otherwise, comes from Czechoslovakia, Russia, East Germany, etc. I mean, communism has been at the root. It was at the root of Ayatollah Khomeini. It was at the root of the radical student movements in Germany, in Iraq, in Iran, all of those things that led to the anti-American feelings. And they basically have captured this portion of the Islamic movement. Behind every portion of it, you'll find backing of the local communist cadres and Russia feeding arms into that mix. So while the world has believed that communism is dead and that Russia can't handle its own problems, it has not ceased to feed these revolutionary movements around the world. And that great beast is going to raise its head and strike back one of these days. It has been feigning weakness for many years. And so I'm very, very concerned that the U.S. is covering for Russian weakness, is not alerting its American people on purpose because of this conflict agenda.
And yet we're still sending money to Russia so that they can, of course, deactivate their biological and chemical weapons and deactivate their the old missiles, intercontinental missiles, which would have to be deactivated anyway. So we give them the money to do it so they can put their money into building new missiles, which really doesn't make any sense unless, of course, what you're saying is correct, that we really are planning on World War III.
Yes, you know, when I talk about the fact that we haven't had any terrorism in the United States and the anomalies and hypocrisy of the administration position, one example that's thrown up to me is the example of the shoe bomber, Richard Reed. They say, isn't that an example of real Al-Qaeda terrorism? He just confessed this week that he was a member of Al-Qaeda and that he did, in fact, intend to blow up this transatlantic flight. But this is suspect on a couple of counts. First of all, Reid's confession was part of a scripted plea bargain where he had agreed to state his connection to Al-Qaeda. Frankly, I don't believe he was working for Al-Qaeda, and I think I can prove it, based upon the fact that he obviously was not a trained terrorist. Anyone coming from Al-Qaeda who had been trained in explosives would never have attempted to put plastic explosives in the heel of your shoe and light it with a match.
I mean, that really is almost as absurd as Timmy McVeigh's story of lighting the fuses to the bomb he was driving to the Murrah building 5 minutes away with a match. You know, you just don't do that sort of thing.
Well, especially with plastic explosives. You see, plastic explosives just simply burn. In the military, we used to take little chips from the mortars, plastic explosives, and we'd put them on the fire and light a match to them to cook our little canned meals on. They just burn, very slowly, in fact. Plastic explosive cannot explode without a blasting cap. I mean, this person was not a trained terrorist. I think he was acting independently on his own initiative. He was simply sympathetic to the movement. He simply was not an Al-Qaeda-trained terrorist. So we have no experience with, in the United States, no arrests of anyone who is a trained sleeper terrorist with explosives, training, manuals, bomb-making equipment, nothing. And I find that impossible to believe if, in fact, we really have a terrorist problem in the United States.
Well, of course, they're going to point to this fellow that was arrested at the border coming in for, Y2K episode and bombing plan to blow up the Los Angeles airport, but didn't sound that he had that much other than some blasting caps.
Right. I mean, there are, small, but you see the profile of a real terrorist, the ones that they found, whether it was Carlos that they found in Europe or any of the other terrorists that they found in Europe. I mean, these had whole bomb-making factories within there and large quantities of explosives and timing mechanisms and all of the things, or else bombs, already placed into radios and ready to go off. We've found none of those types of people, and if there are hundreds of cells, certainly they should have been. It's very strange, of course, that every time they make one of these arrests, we find out, as the news extracts more and more from the government, that they have years of information on these people.
But, of course, they tell us now, of course, we just couldn't monitor these people at all before the attack, and then we find out they had years of monitoring them. We're out of time, Joel. I want to thank
as
you so
always.
Much because it's always the time goes so quickly. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll get you back here again before very long.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Dan.
Good night. God bless
you. Good night.
And again, of course, if you'd like to get hold of Joel Skousen, his telephone number is 801-224-4746. I'd wait until Monday to call it. It's joelskousen.com up on the Internet. And, of course, we have to bid adieu to our listeners up in this great state of Washington. Pray for America. Pray for peace. Pray for our leaders. Pray for an awakening of the American people. Pray for revival. And, of course, please pray for our ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And we'll be with you. I'll be doing a program tomorrow at 10 on the ACN. Until then, goodbye. Well, good evening, Dr. Stan, here at Radio Liberty. Coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, this was a fascinating talk last hour with Joel Skousen. This hour, we're going to be talking with the investigative reporter, Karen Lee Bixman. And before we get to Karen Lee, I just want to comment, if you've been watching the stock market, it was Dow, I think, was down around 770 somewhere today, maybe a little lower. In other words, remember it was up 1150 and now it's 770. The NASDAQ, is 1100, falling progressively. We see our stock market in very, very poor condition. And now, of course, with the dock strike in San Francisco and all up and down the Pacific Coast, this is going to begin to shut down industries. Now, the logical thing, especially when we're going into war, would for the president to intervene and just say, we're going to stop the strike, you know, a 30-day cooling-off period. And, of course, they can force the port owners and the labor unions to go along with this. This is not a labor strike, you understand. It's a lockout. And, of course, because the unions were slowing down work, why, of course, the owners simply locked them out and said, you're going to have to come back and work full-time, and this, you're just costing us too money. We're going to go bankrupt when you were, instead of unloading 30 cartons an hour, you're only unloading 15. You're doing this intentionally. It's called a labor slowdown. But the impact on the entire economy is going to be felt in a very, very short period of time. And then, of course, well, I'm going to let Karen Lee talk about the financial situation because she's more up on this than I am. But we know that the Bank of Japan, the Japanese, can't get their economy going. We know that there are real problems in South America and Argentina. Brazil, of course, is living on borrowed money, as is Uruguay. As our nations throughout the world, of course, Africa is a basket case. And even the European economy is not doing that well. So, Karen Lee, what do you see happening? You called me earlier today and asked me about an article you'd read in Reuters, something the Fed was doing. Did you ever find out what the Fed Reserve System was doing?
Yes, and good evening, Dr. Stan. There is so very, very much to talk about this evening. I hope we get it all in, but I am not over-accentuating anything when I say that we are really on the precipice at this point. I feel that things are imploding so quickly behind the scenes. But I called you this afternoon, and I will read this article to your listeners. A Thursday, yesterday, there was a Reuters story out of New York, just really one line. It said, the Federal Reserve said on Thursday it was adding temporary reserves to the banking system by overnight fixed system repurchase agreements. Well, I called the Federal Reserve in Los Angeles. They didn't know what it was. They referred me to the Federal Reserve in San Francisco. Nobody knew what it was there. I ended up talking to a very nice lady in New York at the Federal Reserve System. Actually, it was 20 minutes of Greek, quite frankly. She kind of beat around the bush, and she's talking about interest rates and all these other things. And when I kept trying to pin her down, it was like trying to hold a greased pig. In essence, what this is when banks are having problems, when they need enough reserve in an overnight situation like this, the Federal Reserve will actually come in and give money to the banks. Of course, they never identify the banks that are having problems. I talked to her at length about the situation with J.P. Morgan Chase, the derivatives, the overseas Latin America situation, and of course she said, well, I can't comment on any of those things. But bottom line, even reading between the lines, what this is the Federal Reserve is actually, it is bolstering up the banking system. And there was another article that I wanted to read to your listeners, Dr. Stan, that something I wasn't even aware of. The New York Post, John Crudell, had a great story yesterday, and he said that there is a confidential report that Washington regulators put out that I wasn't even aware of called a Shared National Credit Exam. And what that is, it's this confidential report. It's put out by the regulators, and the purpose is actually to tell bankers whether the regulators feel that the banks have made enough allowance for their bad debt, and especially on syndicated loans. Now, yesterday, we heard about Comerica, which was indeed number 25 when I visited with you last. We talked about the banking collapse and the derivatives. Well, Comerica has $22 billion in derivatives. And yesterday they announced that they were going to take a $213 million loss because of a review by bank regulators. So this came, the Shared National Credit Exam came into play on Comerica. Comerica, actually, their stock, I think, lost 21% in one day. But they're having problems because they had purchased Imperial Bank in California. And Crudell says in this article that an even bigger concern is that Comerica's problems may be indicative of the whole banking system in the third quarter. And then now this coming week, the third quarter profits are going to start being released by banks. Well, things are imploding behind the scenes. J.P. Morgan Chase, that I talked about extensively when I was with you last time, they're number one in the kingpin of derivatives. Their stock, their 52-week high, has been $40.95. Their stock is now all the way down to $16.54. I have received several calls from Europe this week. The Deutsche Bank is having serious trouble, liquidity problems. All of the big banks that we have talked about, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Bank One, the European banks are really, really having difficulties. Lloyd's of London is having problems. You talked briefly about the Japanese banks. It was very interesting, Dr. Stan. I don't know if people were aware of the fact back in 29, what actually caused the crash was the FTSE, the London market, but the fall in the British pound sterling. That actually precipitated the crash of our market here in the United States. It'll be interesting if that happens again. But I full well see that these banks are just, the situation is deteriorating so rapidly behind the scenes. The market, as you mentioned, today the Dow was down another 188 points. The market is down to 75.28, the Dow. And the NASDAQ is 1140. This is a six-year low. So yet we have not reached the point of what they call contagion. That means when everybody finally runs to the exits to sell their stock. But I fully expect to see this month a market crash. But what I do want to tell your listeners, so far I have been checking graphs, charts. I have looked extensively at what happened in 1929. And up until this point, the market has actually patterned 29 almost identically. And as we had spoken about previously, but it's worth mentioning again, I have said that the market crashed in October of 29, but what never gets spoken, the market rallied in November of 29. And people thought, well, the crash is over. Now, no problem. I can go back in and grab all these bargains. Well, people jumped back in the market. Even those who had lost a lot of money jumped back in the market in November of 29. The market rallied. It actually recovered 50% of what it lost. And then in March of 30, it came crashing down even lower than it did in October of 29. So what I fully expect to happen here, Dr. Stan, this market is going to crash sometime this month. Then if it continues to follow the 29 pattern, we will see a rally in November, December, January, February, and probably into March. And all the time we will hear the spin doctor say, see, the worst is over, everything's fine, jump in. And then I think in March it will crash even lower than it is going to crash this month. I am fully expecting to see by the end of 2003, I think we can see the Dow Jones as low as 1,000 points and the NASDAQ maybe down to 500.
Well, have you, did you follow at all this recent meeting of the financial leaders in Washington, D.C.? And you know what was amazing to me, this article of the New York Times commenting that many of the financial leaders of the world are very, very concerned about the stability of the American dollar.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, you cannot continue running these massive deficits. You know, you just can't do that without leading to the collapse of the dollar. And, of course, if the dollar collapses, then, of course, you will bring down all the rest of the economies of the world. And, you know, it's really very interesting. I think Argentina is an example of what happened when they had an artificially maintained peso. It was tied to the dollar. But, of course, there was no way they could maintain it because it wasn't worth what, of course, they were valuing it at. So one day, of course, they just simply closed the banks after promising everybody they wouldn't do that, and you couldn't get any money out. Now you can get your money out, but it's lost over two-thirds of its value. So most of the people haven't bothered to take their money out. It has so little value today. But what they've done, of course, they've impoverished the entire population there, at least those who did not get their money out of the banks before that and get it into something that was really stable.
Well,
and people
yes,
say
we
this
are gonna
could
see
never
the
happen
same
here.
Thing,
but,
right. We are going to see the same thing here, Dr. Stan. And you and I have spoken previously on air. I have spoken about the new currency that will be issued in March of next year or by spring, the new colored currency. I think by that time our dollar probably will have crashed because we will have a dual currency system, the colored currency being used within the U.S., which will be a dead, useless currency, the current dollars being traded outside the U.S. So we will see a dollar crash in the midst of this also. But you briefly mentioned the dock strike, and I did want to bring that up. You know, I live down here in Orange County in Huntington Beach. I'm very close to the water here. And it is the most amazing sight. Now, from we have the Port of Long Beach and the Port of Los Angeles where the dock workers, the longshoremen, are on strike. And I went down to the end of the pier yesterday. And as far as the eye can see, they now say for 20 miles in the water, these cargo ships are backed up. And I was thinking when I was standing out there, this must be what the coast of France looked like, Normandy D-Day, when you stood out on that land and all you could see were U.S. ships. I mean, if these were battleships out in the water, that's exactly what this would look. It just looks like an armada. It is an overwhelming sight. I have never seen anything like this in my entire life. And, of course, I had my binoculars looking out there, and I'm seeing China shipping, you know, all the Chinese ships. But, unfortunately, right now, this is costing the American economy $1 billion a day. And because of NAFTA, because now we are so reliant on foreign goods, we are going to see massive, massive economic problems because of this. I think the one car plant in Fremont up north in the Bay Area there has had to close down because they can't get their parts. I have been reading different stories about furniture factories, the fruit even that leaves here. Broccoli is rotting out on the port out here because they can't ship it overseas. This is not going to just impact California, although I think that California is going to be hit awfully hard by this. The produce that comes in and out of this port here in Southern California, all the goods and services. And again, you know, we only have NAFTA to blame for this because we are so reliant now on overseas goods. But this is going to impact the country. You did say George Bush could come in and, you know, stop this in a heartbeat. I know there was a dock strike back in 1971. Richard Nixon finally stepped in after 3 months. However, we didn't have NAFTA in place, and we weren't as dependent on foreign goods as we are now. So if anyone just thinks that this is going to affect California, they're wrong, but they should even look at it in this light. California has the sixth largest economy in the world. We could actually be a nation. And if California's economy is affected majorly, it is going to affect the rest of the country.
I have no question that this is going to happen, and I think that we have to realize the implications of this with everything else going on. If this is happening by itself and we had a stable dollar, we are the largest debtor nation in the world. And we actually have to have $4 billion a day coming in from other countries simply to keep our economy going. What happens if other countries don't send their money into the United States? What happens if other countries start drawing the money out and suddenly we can't finance our bonds? This is, of course, what happened in Argentina. People say it couldn't happen here. Well, I can't help but wonder, as we see our nation intent upon going to war, that's going to cost us, they estimate, between $100 and $200 billion. Where's the money coming from?
Well, the thing is, people say it couldn't happen. It is happening now, right before our very eyes, only it is behind the scenes. And most Americans are not aware of what is going on, but it is happening. This market is going to crash. The dollar will lose its value. We will be going to war with Iraq. These are things that even variables, there's unknown variables that we haven't even looked at, a terrorist attack, many, many things that could happen. But just the variables, the things that are laying on the table right now that we can see are overwhelming. And it is, I think, Dr. Stan, you and I have talked privately, but I do believe now that we are right on the precipice. I don't believe there's no turning this economy around. This market is going to come down. The banks are failing behind the scenes. And I can only say, you know, I would kind of like to throw some things out there to people to be prepared at this point in time. It's kind of like batten down the hatches now, folks, because the storm is ready to start.
All right, fine. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have thoughts, if you have a disagreement, you know, we'd love to hear from you. But I really think that somebody has to point out that, you know, this last week, right, we saw one day the market went up 300 points. I've forgotten whether it was this week or the end of last week. But, gee, isn't that wonderful? That, ladies and gentlemen, is the plunge team. And that is the Federal Reserve System working in conjunction with some of the banks to keep the market from just completely falling out of bed. I mean, they're fearful of a 500 down in the market 2 or 3 days running, and of course the whole system would begin to collapse. So they're playing games with our mind, and they rush in there and they buy up stocks. Now, this is against the law. If anybody else did this, why, they'd go to prison. If this was known, if this could be actually proven in court, why, of course, this would be a federal crime. But do you honestly think that Janet Reno or John Ashcroft would intervene and, of course, suggest that officials of the Federal Reserve System should go to prison for manipulating the market? Of course, if you know what the plunge team's going to do, you can make a lot of money in a very, very short period of time. But the other thing is, of course, how are they going, of course, to keep things going? Well, they're going to have to start printing more and more money. And it sounds like that's really what they're doing. Karen Lee was talking about how we had this Federal Reserve System, the overnight infusion of funds or lending funds to the banks. But this is highly inflationary, isn't it?
Well, you know, it might appear that it is inflationary. And, you know, we may have, maybe a short period of this inflation, but actually what I really think the trend is going to be, I believe we're going to have a deflationary economy just as they did in the 1930s.
But can't you have an inflationary depression, which is the worst of all scenarios?
You could, but what I'm seeing just in the market and in reviewing prices, prices are coming down already, except for oil. I will say we're going to see a massive increase in oil and gasoline prices due to the situation in the Middle East. But I am seeing consumer goods, consumer prices are coming down because people are not buying. And so the retailers are having to continue to discount, put things on sale. We're seeing this happen with the car dealers. I have yet not seen one example so far of any inflation on the horizon. Everything so far has been deflation. And as the consumers continue to stop, when they stop buying, when they lose their jobs and they realize that they don't have any more money to put on their credit cards, I think we're going to see that deflationary mode kick in.
All right, it's going to be very interesting. Certainly, the prices of housing is, I think, just about peaked.
Right.
And of course, I think that
the next
big
bubble
is the housing buzzle,
right.
bubble and the land bubble. And, you know, this is what happened in Japan, so we can sort of look at Japan and get an idea of what's going to happen. We find banks over in Japan that are selling their property. In other words, they had to repossess a lot of property because they'd lent money on it. And, of course, when the loan was larger than the value of the property, people just walked away and gave up the money they had in it. The banks in Japan are selling many of these pieces of property at 20 cents on the dollar.
Yes, you know, Japan is such a good example. If we remember in the 1980s and really the 70s, the 80s, we heard all the talk from the car manufacturers and computers that were just coming into their own and different products about everything being made in Japan and unfair trade rules and how the Japanese economy was booming and they were buying hotels in the Rockefeller Center, and we were just so upset by what the Japanese were doing because the economy was booming. And I believe in 89 is when their economy tanked, and they're still dealing with this now. I believe they are in a situation now very, very close to the point that their banks are just going to fail completely and crumble. As you say, when that happens, the Japanese will have no choice but to pull their money out of our economy. We know the Saudis are doing this. As I said, the German, the British, and the French banks are experiencing problems. So as these countries have problems, they have no choice but to pull their funds out of the United States.
Well, I really think, of course, a lot of this is going to be done for the psychological impact on the American.
Yes.
Because as long as things are good, why, people are not going to want to give up their freedom, not going to want to relinquish their rights to government, not want to go along with all these crazy new programs that are planned for us. But when things get bad, why most Americans will look to government to solve the problems without ever realizing that the government has created the very problems and they already have the solution waiting for us.
Well, I go back to the time of the 1930s during the Depression. I think some of the policies that would forever change America, turning it from a constitutional republic to a democracy, occurred in the 1930s. We had the income tax system. We had Social Security. We had Roosevelt's New Deal. With those policies put in place, that forever changed the landscape of our country. That was done during a time of great economic hardship. And it is true, unfortunately, that when people do have hardship, they will look to the government now more than they ever have, because we have a completely different climate now than in the 30s. In the 1930s, we still had a moral nation, a nation of individualists who actually were taught, they were embarrassed if they had to take a handout. They were told that they were to work hard, and they didn't riot because they didn't get their government checks. I mean, this was an unheard thing. You didn't even have such a thing back then. Now, the moral fabric of the United States has been completely destroyed. Everyone in one way or the other is on the government dole, whether it be welfare, Social Security, Medicare payments. People are used to getting their government checks. And so when things break down, when they don't have their jobs, when they can't get their money out of the bank, then we are going to see riots. We are going to see the blood of Americans flow in the streets, unfortunately, and it will be during this time of economic crisis, I believe, that martial law will be declared. And the very last of our liberties that are remaining will be snatched away from us during that time, Dr. Stan.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. I don't know if you've looked into this situation that Chris Ruddy has written about, but apparently up on the FEMA site, they had an offer for a $300 million contract for a plan for building cities for displaced people. And these would be tent cities with sanitation plants and some sort of means of feeding hundreds of thousands of people. They were putting out $300 million for the plan to do this. And of course, when Chris, of course, wrote this, put this in one of his articles, why there was an outcry from FEMA saying this isn't true at all. And of course, several of Chris's friends had contacted FEMA, and they said a total misinterpretation of what's happening. So Chris called the public relations people and said, how could this be a misinterpretation? I have your article off the internet where you're actually asking for bids. And the fellow said, well, this is just for bids. You know, we're not going to start building here. We won't have these built until the year 2004 or 2005. So why are they planning on relocation plants for relocation sites for hundreds of thousands of American citizens? What do they know about what the future holds that the average American doesn't? Because everything is planned, I believe, and scripted ahead of time. And they, as you say, are planning on violence in our cities, the breakdown of the structure of law and order.
Well, I am familiar with Chris's article, and the article stated that these were to be in place by January 2003. Then the clarification on the bids that you mentioned. We know, Dr. Stan, that, you know, this could very well be, quite frankly, I don't want to sound scary, but we're really addressing facts this evening. If we had nuclear explosions in the major cities, for example, near Los Angeles, where I live, if we had some biological terrorism, they would have to get the people out of those major cities. So therefore, you have to account for millions of people. We know, as you reported in 1996, and in fact, one of my interviews is on the concentration camp in America tapes that you offer that you and I did together. I did a three-part series on concentration camps way back then, and people said, oh, no, this couldn't be true. Well, there are concentration camps, and those who are not willing to go along with the plan will be put in the concentration camps. I have a LA Times August 14th, 2002 article that says right up here in plain English, Ashcroft's plan would allow him to order the indefinite incarceration of U.S. citizens and summarily strip them of their constitutional rights and access to the courts by declaring them enemy combatants. That's what I said in that series way back when. So this is a reality.
And I fear that you're right, in fact. What was the title of that article?
Camps for Citizens, Ashcroft's Hellish Vision.
Ashcroft's Hellish Vision.
And August 14th, 2002, L.A. Times.
Right. And people have to understand, although that this is not Ashcroft's alone, these things have been planned for a long time. And those of you who have never seen what we call the sampler or the amazing clips, where they actually, the congressional hearings where they're trying to bring this out, where Congressman Jack Brooks tries to bring this out, and Senator Inouye keeps interrupting him because they don't want the American people during the Iran-Contra hearings to know what is being planned for them. Long-range planning, and behind that, I believe, of course, truly demonic intelligence. Well, we're going to be back here. You've got 3 minutes, Karen Lee, if you'd like to get a cup of coffee or a drink of water. And when we get back, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, if you were here in the Central Coast of California, it's 464-8295. That's 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and, of course, we hope many of you out there will really believe in what we're doing, trying to educate the American people. If the American people don't understand what's happening, they're going to simply panic. When you understand philosophically that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, when you understand that there really is a God and there really is a devil, and, of course, these two forces locked in combat. Not that God couldn't intervene at any time and end this whole situation. But, of course, he expects us to be involved. And the reason that the evil prospers is that good people aren't involved, that good people do nothing. And so I really believe the Lord weeps at the apathy and indifference of the average American to the suffering that our country has brought on the people throughout the rest of the world, where we have our troops in 140 nations throughout the world today, of course, imposing our will on other people and, in many instances, maintaining ruthless dictators in power, and men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And as has been said, what goes around comes around. And if we're indifferent to other people's suffering, who will be concerned about our suffering if it comes? And I believe it is coming. I believe that's the way that God's going to get people's attention. And we've got to be there to explain to people what's going on and hopefully to lead them into that personal relationship with Jesus Christ, which is all that gives life meaning at all. So if you'd like to become part of our team, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, it's as easy as just picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927, because we need to expand our coverage out across America. We're on about 50 different outlets across America today, but of course we need to expand that and expand it as rapidly as we can. The more people understand what's happening, the less effect this is going to have, and the less their people are going to be manipulated by the dark spiritual forces that are working behind the scenes. So I give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family and join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. Again, our number 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Karen Lee Bixman. And Karen Lee, can you tell people how you can they can get in touch with you? We can't put the price out, but you can tell them how to reach the investigative reporter and get your publications, and they are excellent.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. As many already probably know, I do publish the investigative reporter. It comes out once a month, and I have been focusing as of late on the economy, because I think that is the most important thing to hit the American people coming to a neighborhood very soon near you. Our phone number here, if people would like subscription information, is 562-493-8957. That's 562-493-8957. I do want to tell people we are located in California. We get in the office about 9:30 in the morning. I get a lot of calls. Once in a while, I will forward the phones, and that phone starts ringing sometime at 5 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast. So, you know, they're calling not knowing we're in California. So we are in California. But if they'd like to contact our office for subscription information, we'd sure love to talk to them.
All right, fine. And, of course, Karen Lee Bixman, the investigative reporter. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree or disagree, why, give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY, and we're simply talking about what's happening to the market. And what people don't understand is that sort of like the laws of gravity, whatever goes up is going to come down, and the higher it goes, why the further it's going to fall. And the reason for this is really very, very simple. You've created all this artificial credit, and of course everything is built upon credit. We have this massive derivative, a market of $40 or $50 trillion, and it's all, of course, there's not that much money in the world. There's only a fraction of that much money in the world. The banks of Japan have about $500 billion of bad loans, and of course they are facing a collapse of many of those banks in Japan. And remember, a dozen years ago, 8 of the 10 largest banks in the world were Japanese banks. Most of those banks today are penny stocks. And of course, here in America, why, of course, the Japanese are pikers compared with what our banks have done. And you have all this artificial credit, all this artificial value. I mean, homes are selling for, I had a house, I bought it for $42,000 in 1962. I sold it, I think, for $70,000 after a number of years and putting a lot of money into it. That house is on the market, last time I saw, for $3 million. Now, it's a lovely house, but, it's not worth $3 million. It's only worth $3 million in this expansive situation where there's all this artificial value, but the house is not worth that. It's worth, what it would cost to replace. But we have inflated values on everything today. And, of course, these values are going to have to get back to some sort of a solid foundation before the economy can begin to grow again.
Well, maybe we can talk a little bit about that, Dr. Stan, because, unfortunately, some people have been pulling their money out of the stock market and putting it in real estate, thinking that real estate bubble won't pop. And in fact, that's what I'm going to be writing on next in the month of October. That is the next bubble that is going to pop. And we will see real estate, I think, a year from now, at least point where it's 50 cents on the dollar, if not less. So maybe we should just go over some of these things. You know, this is a very heavy-duty show information that I'm giving this evening, but first and foremost, just like you said in your commercial break, this is a spiritual battle that we are fighting. And along with preparation information, the most important thing that I can relate to anyone this evening is if you do not have a relationship with Jesus Christ, I do not know how you are going to get through this coming event, because I think really people will have heart attacks, we will see people commit suicide, all these things, if they do not have a relationship with the Lord, because they will not know how to handle it. The American people are going to be in a state of shock. So number one, people need to have their spiritual houses in order. As far as investments, if anyone is still in the market at this point in time thinking that they're going to hold for the long term, I can only remind them it took 24 years for the market in 29 to recover, and we have yet to see capitulation. There is going to be some trigger event, I don't know what it is, but there is going to be a trigger event that will occur where people will suddenly realize that the market is failing and they will run to pull their money out in droves. We have not seen that yet, but it is coming. If you're still in the market, you know, don't walk out, run, because this thing is going straight down. After we see the stock market collapse, that will be followed shortly by a bond market collapse. Mutual funds, real estate, anything that people have normally put stock in, these are going to go by the wayside. What we will see, a bull market, will be in the metals, in gold and silver. I've said I think by the end of, 2003, we could see gold as high as $1,200 an ounce. It's about, I think, $323, something like that. That's going to be the only real value, real money. We're really down to the wire here now. For people to get prepared. I always say have a stock of food on hand because what I've heard even from the stock strike, Dr. Stan, there's talk down here at least that the Teamsters Union may go out and strike in sympathy with the dock workers. Now, the Teamsters drive the trucks, at least here in Southern California, for the major grocery food chains, Albertsons, Safeway, Pavilion, Vons, and so forth. If the Teamsters go on strike, those groceries will not be going on the shelves. So just one more reason that people should have at least, I would say, 6 months of food in their home. And I advise people to do have some dollars, some maybe about $10,000 in cash. But these are things, if people have not prepared, we are at the midnight hour now, and they need to do so immediately because we are quickly running out of time.
All right, fine. Well, I think that certainly people should be prepared for some difficult times, and I don't mean to be a doomsayer. But I believe that, you know, if you read history, God eventually always moves against a nation that is turned against him. And when America turned its back on God, it was only a matter of time before God turned his back on America. And, of course, yes, all these things that are happening are the machinations of men and of bankers. And but behind all of these things, of course, is this eternal battle between good and evil that is being waged out in our society today. And certainly I really anticipate that the exactly as Karen Lee says, the next bubble to burst is the property bubble. And right now, of course, the houses are not going for quite as much as they were, but they're still going for a lot more than you would anticipate. But, of course, all we need to do is you look and see what's happening in Japan, where, of course, the property, which, you know, is just way, way, way overpriced now, as I said, is going for 20 cents on the dollar. And I really anticipate that we'll see that here in the United States before long. And, of course, then, of course, the people say, well, but it's only a matter of time before it comes back again. Well, why should it come back again? America is the greatest debtor nation in the world today. We no longer have an industrial base in this country. I mean, what is the reason why America should regain its position of prominence? All we need to do is look and see what happened in Great Britain. Great Britain, of course, was the dominant nation in the world for several hundred years. Its currency, the pound sterling, was the basic reserve currency of the world. And then, of course, after the Second World War, why, of course, this mantle shifted to the United States, and the dollar became the predominant currency. But, of course, when we are the greatest debtor nation in the world, and everybody's holding dollars, and there's nothing behind those dollars, one of these days, they're going to dump those dollars. And when they do, why, of course, you're going to see our country flooded with currency. And that's why I really think that they have printing this new currency. I think that there are a lot of people holding dollars throughout the world. And when they go to cash them in, somebody's going to say, sorry. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree. I agree. Just like in the Weimar Republic in the 1920s. Now, that was a case of hyperinflation, which I don't think we're going to have, but it was the same thing. People had hung on to their German marks, and when they went to turn them in, they were no good except for wallpaper in the rooms. So I do agree. That's why I don't recommend people sitting there with $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 because they will be eventually useless. But I just wanted to touch on what you said a few moments ago about spirituality and God's judgment. It's my personal opinion that God has had his hand of protection on this nation. I think God blessed the United States with abundance, and instead of remaining that moral nation, the people just became very wicked. Amoral, they turned away from God, and they just became very concerned with all the material goods. We've just seen the total moral decline of this nation. And I think since 9/11, quite frankly, that God has taken his hand of judgment off, his hand of protection off, and judgment is coming not because he is a vile God, but I truly believe that God loves his people. And this is the only way that he can see, then, through bringing judgment or allowing judgment to occur, that people will turn to him. And so you are so right. And again, I'm just going to recommend your book. I can't talk about it enough, but The Brotherhood of Darkness, where you address all the secret societies. Really, every high position in government right now, whether it be a Fortune 500 company, whether it be TV, media, anyone in the government, Congress, in the White House, we see this interlinking of the secret satanic societies, and that's what's running the nation right now. It sure isn't, we don't have Christian men running this country.
It was just so funny. I did an interview with a woman named Alexandra Robbins this week, and I think she's a very nice lady, and she's written a book on Skull and Bones.
Yes.
And I think, though, that she's been given some bad information. But at one point, of course, she discussed this, this Skull and Bones wedding that the woman had witnessed. And, of course, the impression that Alexandra had was, well, yes, a lot of foolishness in the initiation, but, you know, nothing really of a sinister level of nature. And then, of course, she began talking about the Skull and Bones wedding. And here you have these people, these are the members of Skull and Bones, coming in with their black hooded gowns, chanting in this strange language, and, of course, you know, and obviously a pagan ceremony. This whole thing was totally pagan, you know. Of course, it was daytime, so they didn't have their candles like they have at the Bohemian Grove. But, of course, I said, well, doesn't that bother you that these are the people who lead America involved in this Christian ceremony, pardon me, this pagan ceremony? And she said, well, yes, it really did. And, of course, you have to understand, this is what really Skull and Bones is all right all about. It is really the leaders of America. Based in paganism.
And Alexandra herself is a member of one of the secret societies at Yale.
Right, but, you know, I rather liked her. I think she's honest, but I think that these other people that she talked to had all sworn the oaths, and those oaths bind people together for life. Mm-hmm. We've got Christine calling from Capitola. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm great. I don't mean to, I just got a chance to tune into the show about a half an hour ago, and I don't mean to change the subject back to finances again, but, you know, I'm young and I'm concerned, and I'm ignorant on the subject of finances. I'm not ignorant on the subject of politics, thanks to you and some other good people that I've met in this area. And I just wanted to ask Karen, I mean, I know you're not a financial advisor, but I'm leaving a job and I'm going to have some money left in a pension and profit sharing plan. It's not enough. It's not a lot. We're talking, you know, $5,000 or $6,000. For me to take it and to convert it into gold that I can keep myself is going to, you know, cause me some tax implications. I mean, if
right.
you were,
I've heard this many times, Christine. I've had this question come to my office so many times.
I'm just saying, if you were me, would you just bite the bullet and pay the taxes and do
if
it?
If I had money in a pension fund right now, I would get it out immediately. I would take the hit now rather than lose everything later. Because the show I have done previously with Dr. Stan, we talked about the $50 trillion in derivatives held by 391 banks in the United States. I have previously said that people are going to lose their pension funds and their 401ks because of the derivatives. So it is your choice. You either take the hit now or you lose it all later.
And that's funny because the new job that I'm going to, you know, you have a choice of participating right away in the 401k plan, which I'm not going to do. So that basically that was my question, was just to take the hit now and...
Yeah, Christine, unfortunately, I know I am painting a grim picture this evening, but believe it or not, I am not even painting the picture black enough. That's how bad
it's really
going to be.
You really the real truth. You've been hearing the good news tonight, Christine.
Right. Well, just one last question. Okay, and I know I've heard you before, and I think you're just great, and you... Talk about getting out of debt, and being that I am young and I was a bit foolish in my younger years, you know, and managed to accumulate some credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take the money? Would you advise me to take the money to pay off the rest of the debt that I have, or just buy the gold?
Christine, I fully expect the stock market to crash this month. It is almost, I hate to say this, under any other conditions, I would say get out of debt. We're almost past that point. Surely at this point in time, you don't want to spend anything that you don't need. I mean, you have to be extremely careful now of what you buy. You know, let it be groceries, let it be some sort of item that will get you through the 6 months.
And no,
you know, whether it be toilet paper or just the basic necessities of life, don't spend anything really that you don't need. At this point in time, and what I have said before, what you do not own, you will lose. If your house is not paid for, if your car is not paid for, you're going to lose them. So as far as your credit card debt goes at this point in time, you know, if it's going to take you 2 or 3 years to pay that credit card off, you don't have that kind of time anymore. I would seriously sit down. I'm a Christian. First of all, I believe in prayer. Taking this whole situation and praying about it, and individually I believe God shows us what we're supposed to do in our life. Pray for discernment, understanding. But I think at this point in time, you need to do something immediately. And whatever that is to prepare, if that is to buy gold and silver food, that's what you need to concentrate on, because we don't have that 2-3 years time anymore to sit there and pay on our credit cards and get out of debt.
Right.
Out of time.
And, of course, you may be able to pay that off with the profits.
That's what I was
some of these things,
I'm saying.
Right?
Yeah, I could pay it off with the money from the profit-sharing plan, or I could buy the gold. And I think what I'm hearing from you is to buy the gold. I mean, it is credit card debt, so there's nothing they can take from me. I mean,
but it's the individual decision that you have to make. I won't come out and tell anyone, no, don't pay your credit cards.
Right.
You know, that is a decision that you have to make. But what I'm, again, I'm saying, you know, the old situation was, I'll pay off your, you know, get out of debt. If it's going to take you 2 or 3 years to do that, we don't have that kind of time anymore.
Right, and so what you're saying is it's going to come down to people trading goods and services with gold
and
silver.
I believe that's why it's so important to have gold and silver coins. I do, if people are interested, they can call my office. I do recommend a very good Christian man that deals in gold and silver. I tell people, do not get involved in numismatic coins. Paying $1,000 for some uncirculated coin, that's pure ridiculousness.
What about the cougarans? I mean, gold is gold, right?
Well, no. Then again, you know, we'd have to do a whole show on gold and silver. If you'd like to call my office,
I can give
a recommendation on a good man. But that, I believe, will come a time where it will be barter with gold and silver. And if nothing else, even just for investment purposes, because at 323, right now, as I say, I think at the end of 2003, we're going to see gold at about 1,200.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank
Sorry
you,
to change
Papa.
The subject back.
Oh, no, that's
okay.
All right. Thank you
okay.
so much for calling,
Bye-bye.
Christine. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and if you have a question for Karen Lee, our telephone number, 464-8295, or out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And, of course, we're painting a rather bleak picture, but all you need to do is look and see what's happening to that stock market to realize that things are bleak. And then, of course, we're facing a major war, and it doesn't seem that there is anything that is going to prevent the war from occurring. What really frightens me is so many of the Christian leaders are going along with this without ever having stopped to question, why are we going after Saddam Hussein? Yes, he's a bad man, but we put him in power. We kept him in power. We left him in power in 1991, and according to these recent books, See No Evil by Robert Baer, 20 or more years with the CIA, 1995, why the Iraqi military wanted to overthrow him, and we wouldn't let them. We betrayed the Iraqi military, who wanted to get rid of Saddam Hussein. Why would we do something stupid like that? Unless, of course, this whole thing is scripted. This whole thing is a long-term planning to take us into a war.
And, you know, Dr.
Stan,
just tonight, you know, we're basically discussing the stock market and the economy, and we have left out the Iraqi equation. Just the economic picture itself is bleak, but if we add Iraq into the picture, I fully believe that we're already over in Iraq. We have over 100,000 troops there, but I believe that very soon, I have originally said November. Now it looks like that this may even occur in October, the full-scale invasion of Iraq. I fully believe that once that occurs, we are going to see the effects of it here. Whether it be nukes, whether it be biological terrorism, something with the water supply, the food supply. I mean, there's a whole host of things, smallpox. But I do believe that we're going to see repercussions occur from this Iraqi invasion.
I think so, too. Right now, we've got Mark calling. We're almost out of time. But Mark's calling from Ohio. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Great, Dr. Stan. Just real quickly, I just wanted to say, just to play devil's advocate, what about all these people who are drumbeating and saying, oh, everything's going to be just fine. We're coming out of this thing. We have Republicans in charge.
Well, Mark, I did a show a couple months ago with Dr. Stan where I had a ton of quotes. I compared the current economic climate with that of the 1920s and 30s. And the same spin that you are hearing now is what they said in 1920. Even after the market crashed, my favorite quote in 1930, Herbert Hoover said to a group of businessmen that came to see him, gentlemen, you're too late. The Depression ended 6 months ago. This is just a repeat of what happened 70 years ago. Everything is being, spun by the media. And those who really spend the time, I read 25 to 30 foreign papers a day. I probably spend at least 4 hours a day research. I read all the financial papers, and I do a lot. Anyone that would spend as much time doing this as I do would have to come to the same conclusion.
I would just simply say, Mark, let me just comment that, Herbert Hoover promised two cars in every garage and two chicken and
a chicken in every pot.
And it ended up with two chickens in every garage.
That's right.
Anything else, Mark?
No, that's it. Thanks a lot.
God bless you. Bye-bye. All right. Karen Lee, we're just about out of time. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners tonight?
Again, I would just encourage everyone, please get your spiritual relationship with the Lord intact. Take all this information I have given to you. Have a time of prayer. Really ask the Lord for wisdom and discernment. Because this is coming down very, very soon, and we really need wisdom from the Lord to get through this.
God bless you. I couldn't have said it better. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr.
Bye-bye.
Stan. Bye-bye.
All right, fine. And, of course, this is Dr. Stan. And remember that back of all that foes have plotted, back at all that saints have planned, back of the schemes of men and demons is a higher hidden hand. Warp and woof are heaven created every pattern, good and wise, often perplexing by heavenly standards. Of it clean and right by heavenly eyes. Of course, though the cause of evil prospers, yet his truth alone is strong. Though a portion be the scaffold and upon the throne be wrong, but that scaffold sways the future. For in the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch upon his own. And so, ladies and gentlemen, it is a spiritual battle. As Karen Lee said, get your spiritual house in order. Understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle. Make all the preparations you can, but in the final analysis, the only thing that's going to get you through is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And so until, I guess it'll be Monday before we're again, unless you're going to be listening to our program tomorrow on WXBH at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's www.wxbh.com. We'll be doing our program up in the American Christian Network and back in Albany, New York. This is Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.
She is a bit fatigued, but I guess she mustered up enough energy to call in.